You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 79, November 18th. Steve, we are smack dab in the offseason and couldn't be happier to talk some baseball with you. I'm Van Burnett. He's Steve Gisuelli. You guys can find us on Twitter at Wins Above Pod. I'm at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. We got an exciting show today. We're going to be doing a little bit of looking back with the bold prediction review as Steve's article just released on PitcherList. And we're going to talk about our 10 shots and where we hit and much more frequently where we missed. Talk a little bit about process of bold predictions and tease out some names we might be interested in going bold on in 2023. But we got a lot of stuff to talk about, Steve, and I think we can play it kind of loose. I'm excited to talk about the Pitcherless mock draft a little bit, but the Nick Pollock podcast that I just got done with and that you are on deck to record tomorrow with Nick. So a lot of good stuff, but it's been a while, man. This every other week thing's got me missing the WAF routine. Talk to me about life, man. How's it going?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. As you know, at times daunting, pumping out a weekly episode is. I know, that's not much considering a lot of people do a lot more podcasts and daily stuff. But you know, we do this. This is a side hustle, so it does get, you know, when you're in the middle of August, it's a grind, right?
Tiresome.
We talk about it on the show. But now that we're every 2 weeks, it's nice, you know, you kind of build up to it. It's like, all right, you know, time to record again. And then I'm sure as we finish up these look back episodes and start to get more into preview mode, it'll be even more exciting, right? But yeah, I think it's good. We talk about accountability all the time and wanting to actually stick by and review things that we think will happen or predictions or bold predictions. So timely that my article came out Wednesday as we're recording this. You could check that out, like Van said, on pitcherlist.com, a review of the bold predictions in written form, but good that we'll be talking about it in the verbal form, right, on the pod. So excited to break that down and, you know, maybe improve our process. Like, right, Nick Pollock always says, or when he pitches the bold prediction season to us, right, like, it's not about getting them right. You still want them to be bold. Like a good bold prediction article is getting one right. So if you're getting 8 out of 10, 5 out of 10 even of these predictions right, you're doing it wrong. There's a sweet spot, and I think there's a process that I think maybe we'll talk about when we look ahead and try to tease out some names for our next year's bold predictions. We could apply that. But to do that, we have to look back, right?
Yeah, I think a fun aspect of this that you and I have not spoken about, Steve, is one, the propensity to jump back in on guys that you've gone bold on in the past, because I've had a couple of those. CJ Krohn comes to mind, where I was like 1 year early on this mega bold prediction, and then, you know, he turns around and kind of explodes, and it's like, I feel like it's the epitome of getting burnt when you put your name on it and you write an article on it and you're like, all right, I'm moving on. But sometimes when you look at your rationale leading into it and then you look at the snapshot of the season, I'm finding that, you know, it's not the most insane thing to, you know, go back to the well, although, you know, then it's kind of double the pain and suffering. But curious, in the PL mock draft, did you draft any of your names that were bold predictions? And this can be yes or no. I don't want to spoil the actual predictions for the show.
I don't think I did. Like, and I think it's kind of how it's a lot of how I play, right? Like, I like Dylan Cease and Shane McClanahan when they're fifth and eighth round picks, respectively. I don't like when they're second and third round picks, right?
For sure.
So that kind of goes against how I sort of play.
Well, I think this is just a, you know, this is a microcosm of you actually having good bold predictions that got more expensive, whereas mine are the same price, if not cheaper.
Yeah, and I guess maybe to sort of answer your question a different way, or a question that you maybe didn't ask, but maybe this will be some insightful. But if I'm burned on a guy, like I stay away, right? Like I don't know. Like
life's too short.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, Arenado sort of burned me 2 years ago with my chalkboard pick, and I don't think I think I only had one share of Nolan Arenado, and it was from someone I traded for at like the trade deadline, so like a half season share of Arenado last year. So I tend to get scared and go away from my big misses.
Fair. That's fair. Well, before we get into the list and kind of rattle them off and speculate a little bit, we got to at least address the, on the record, the pitcher list mock draft podcast with Nick. So you're on deck. You're recording tomorrow.
Yep. Yep.
You got all your notes ready. I mean, that is the hot seat. That
you're that's you know, I've been waiting for this podcast for like a year.
Are you gonna be gunning for him?
Yeah, because you know, while being on the hot seat, you know, you kind of just sit there and take it. You know, I that was, I think I joked on last week's episode or 2 weeks ago episode, like that was by far my best team that I drafted in a meaningless mock draft, but I had like Buxton, you know. I waited super long on pitching, but it was like Otani, Javier, you know, a few other gems like Luis Garcia, like guys that were just super late that every single one of them hit. I think I had like, you know, I think I had Judge, Buxton, Acuna was, I think, my first pick, and that, you know, had that been a real team, that wouldn't have been that bad.
Yeah, your staff was terrific, if I recall.
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to give some pushback there and at least try and take some credit for being good last year and push it back a little bit. But then hopefully,
listen, man, you know, take the victory lap.
Handle the hot seat well this year, too, with maybe a little more pushback since I have that.
That's good.
Ammunition in the tank.
That's good courage. It's good courage that you're saying that now too, because I feel like, you know, I went in there.
It's harder to do that. It's harder to do that when you're on the
When he starts talking about glove side versus arm side on the sinkers, I'm like, listen, man, I'm tapped out. But I think he's going to be good, and I've already given you my reasons. No, mine was somewhat painless. I think you know, Wins Above Fantasy has given us some credibility to where Nick was a little bit easier on me this year. Granted, I didn't have a Ranger Suarez 10th round pick or whatever that was.
Yeah, but that ended up being fine. Well, you know, we joked about that this year too. You got a lot of slack for that too.
If I can say for the record, Steve, because I know he's just been somehow hitched to my brand. I actually had very little shares of Suarez. I just thought he was an interesting use case because of how red hot he was at the end of 21. But I believe I am on the record on an earlier episode saying Ranger Suarez will probably be neither terrible nor great. He'll probably just be vanilla and in the middle. And I think that's kind of what he was. I mean, the whip, I recall, wasn't great. But anyway, enough of that. You guys can check all of those out on the pitcher list on the corner, the main podcast network feed where Nick is the host and pretty much grills us across, 23 different draft picks. But it is great content. I've been listening to some of the other guys, and it's a great way to just get, you know, your early opinions, because you kind of hear both sides of the argument and the devil's advocate. It's a great way to figure out guys who you are more or less in or out on, at least this early in the off season.
Yeah, because it's a good way to get a gauge on it, too, because all of the drafts at NFBC are like draft champions, which are draft and hold. So the ADP market you're looking at is not necessarily for the game that you're going to play. This is a standard 5x5 Yahoo fair ADP. Obviously, it's not an ADP. It's just one draft, but at least it'll give you a ballpark of, oh, wow, this guy went this high, or, oh, wow, this guy went this late. You know, so it was good. You know, everyone takes it seriously, and you know, Nick wouldn't do it unless he does it well, and that's what he's doing by having everyone not only do the draft but do a podcast on their draft. So about as in depth of a preview as you can have in the middle of November, right, for draft season, which I think is it's a great resource. I wish that I used it more last year, right? Like, I wish more of my teams looked like what I did earlier in the offseason. But again, you know, maybe that's easier said than done because there isn't an ADP, or, you know, you can get Judge in the end of the second round in a mock draft in November where, I don't know, maybe he was going around there. There was some scares with, like, the COVID shot, right, that he might have missed home games. So,
yeah,
I guess maybe, you know, it is more useful than I think just talking about it.
Yeah, and it's a long off season. You deal with the hype of spring training and, you know, people coming in the best shape of their life and all that
and
stuff.
And last year was so weird, too, because the lockout, the pause of transactions. Like,
true.
Someone was saying, I forgot who it was, but it's so nice to have just a regular off season. I think maybe it was Nick on one of his messages to the pitcher list staff, right? Like,
yeah, full season behind us, full season ahead.
COVID, and yeah, we had COVID and a shortened year, and then we had a lockout in the off season, like a transaction freeze, and people signing in a 5-day span right before spring training. A shortened spring training, like, this is just a normal, regular off season, and I'm very happy that we could approach it as such.
Yeah, the most you got to deal with is that catchers have some depth at the position, and the bases got bigger, and, you know, a little.
Yeah,
bit
the rule changes,
yeah,
true,
but
true,
that's
true,
fine. Yeah, you know, that's the fun stuff. So, all right, well, that's good chatter, and you'll have to text me, let me know how it goes, and we'll talk in a couple weeks, but. To the topic, Steve, bold predictions, and you mentioned a little bit that kind of the assumptions are that you're attempting to be bold. I remember on my little Reddit thread, I had some positive comments about my article, and they're like, this is great, and then one guy was like, none of these are going to happen, and that was in all caps, and I was like, cool, bro. Like, they're not supposed to. It's supposed to be like 10%. So that is kind of the highest level expectation setter. But beyond that, I mean, maybe just talk for the listeners about how you approach this, because I think there's interesting nuance in the fact that these are guys you're excited about, but it is also the nature of a bold prediction that it's not just excitement. There's another variable of kind of that boom bust and all outcomes, you know, the top range of outcomes happening. So talk about kind of your psychology as you put these together, and then we can start getting into the scorecard here.
Like, I think you kind of summed it up well. Like, you obviously have to have a strong opinion, and in most cases for mine, it was a strong positive opinion about these players. But then you want to, for actually, you know, making bold predictions, you want to say, okay, what is like the 90th percentile or even 99th percentile outcome for this player season, or the other way, you know, the bottom 10th percentile outcome for a player, right? Like, you know, if I wanted to make a Byron Buxton bold prediction, it wouldn't be like, oh, Byron Buxton's going to hit 30 home runs, because, like, that's possible. He comes close basically every year, and it wouldn't be that surprising if he did it, even then. You know, even if he was injured and played 100 games, like, that's still a possibility. That's not that bold. For my first pick, like, I want Byron Buxton wins MVP. So that means a player who's never had a fully healthy year has to have a fully healthy year and perform like he is an MVP candidate, and like he showed in short spurts like he did in 2021 and even for points this year, to really make it pop, right?
Yeah.
Like, it needs to be something that probably isn't going to happen. It needs to have someone on a Reddit thread who doesn't understand bold predictions right. Say none of these are going to come true, because that's probably right. None of them should come true. If they all do, you're not being bold enough. So I try to do it with, you know, I sort of learned a lesson from from my chalkboard picks from 2 years ago, like they were probably more bold predictions than they were actually things to bank on. So I think I don't have the problem of going bold. And with my results this year, I think I was probably bold enough too, because not many of them were.
They were good. Yeah,
were correct.
I thought we nailed it on the degree of difficulty. So talk us through. You were halfway there on that first one, Stephen. We'll go back and forth. Don't want to spend a ton of time on the prediction itself, but I think we can talk a little bit about the season and maybe a little snapshot outlook of next season. But Buxton winning MVP, of course, did not.
This was like everybody's bold prediction. So maybe next year I'm going to shy away from like having the chalk bold prediction. Right. I think I put it in my recap article, and there was links to like four different bold predictions, like Eno Saris's, I think it was Scott White's on CBS. So it's like, yeah, that's probably not going to happen if everyone's bold prediction is Byron Buxton winning the MVP. I mean, the thing that was surprising was not that Buxton only played 90 games. But it was that his average sort of dipped back down to pre amazing shortened season and awesome shortened 2021 levels with him. The strikeout rate went back up pretty much, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not like the highly concerning 35% strikeout rate that Buxton had prior to becoming everyone's favorite bold prediction pick, but it was still elevated at 25%. And then the amount of fly balls that he hit, going that fly ball heavy, it's going to just do, that's what's going to lead to, a .224 average. So it was 30%. It was back to 30%. So, in 2019, he had a 23% strikeout rate, 2020, 27, and then 2021, 24%. So it jumped all the way back up to 30.4%. You pair that with the amount of fly balls that he hits, and that's going to be a batting average risk. So I think we need to factor in more than just injury risk with Buxton. Yeah, he had 51% fly balls last year too. That's not a recipe, even with that speed, for hitting anywhere remotely close to like the 2.306 that he had in 2021. I think the ceiling for average might be like the 250, like a 2020 season. So we might have to adjust our expectations, I think, a little bit there.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I mean, he was pulling the ball a lot more, like the barrel rate and launch angle were still way up there, which I think is overall like a positive story. What's weird to me, and I'm probably just forgetting, but the fact that he only played 92 games, but it looks like on the injury report, he had the hip strain in August, late August, but were they resting him like sporadically leading up to that? So was he like three out of four games?
They were resting him a bunch. He had an IL stint, I think, in late April, early May.
Oh, that's what I'm missing.
And then there was also a good amount of time where he would not be on the IL and miss a few games in a row. And then on top of that, I mean, he only had six steals. He didn't get caught, but he's not going to run because, he's just not going to get injured. Like his main goal, he said this year, was to try and play a full season, and he got to 92 games. So I try not to believe in the injury prone label, but this is just at a different level. Like everything would need to go right for Buxton to even play 140 games, which he only did once back in 2017, which is just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he went at pick 77 in our mock draft. That's going to be too early for me, but I don't know. I guess some of it depends on the league format, like a best ball or something where
if you don't have an outfielder and like you're in like the sixth, seventh round and you want to take a high upside outfielder, if you have guys that are like steady eddies without injury risk, like I could see doing something like that, but it's not like where it's going to be last year for me where it's like, oh, well, Buxton fell around four or five, like auto take or wherever he was. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot more hesitation from my end And it's going to be a lot more strategic for me to have Buxton on rosters. Not saying that I won't, but I'll have to be a lot more careful about it.
Yep. Nice segue to me, Steve. I'm just going to be egg on the face this whole show. So let's just rip the Band-Aid here. The first bold prediction I had was that Joey Votto would finish as a top three first baseman. Crunch of numbers, he finished 63rd in the first baseman Razzball player rater. So yeah, not good. There's basically every major league team's backup first baseman finished ahead of Votto. The process I was fine with. In 21, he had 36 homers, was top five in pretty much every sexy stat cast category. And he had the injury, as we were laughing about a few shows ago, Steve, or you mentioned that his quote, "I didn't know I was hurt. I thought I just stunk." And now the quote, which I told Nick on the show, because he was my Mr. Irrelevant last pick of our mock draft. The quote Votto said was, "I'd like to have a strong finish to my career and be proud." Yeah. And he's coming back. I think the Reds would want to give him kind of the Pujols treatment. And this is a guy that his whole career, like, I've had a hard time betting against Votto. So I'm certainly not saying draft with any expectations, but I really do think you can do a lot worse at pick like 320 if he lands there.
It's like taking an upside rookie, right? Like, it's worth a flyer, right? He's going to be free. The Reds are going to let him play. And even in deeper leagues, like in NFBC where there's a corner, you need a third first baseman. Like, I think Votto is a great pick for that because he's going to get the playing time as long as he's healthy. Obviously, that's a risk, but it should be at a very reasonable price that you can move on pretty quickly. So
yep.
I think that'll be a great depth play with upside for a backup first baseman in FBC style. And, even shallower leagues, it's worth a flyer.
I'll probably have some shares, and I'm just jumping back in. But we're each 0-for-1, Steve. You came dangerously close on this one. I think this is absolutely a spiritual victory, but rattle off number two for your bold prediction.
Yeah, this would have been right if not for Nick Pollock's absolutely unnecessary and obviously bias against Dylan Cease. he finished runner-up. The Cy Young voting happened tonight. I believe he was second. Yes, he was the runner-up in the Cy Young. Arguably, I know Verlander was unanimous, but I think he could have made a case for Dylan Cease. So in real baseball mind, he finishes a top five pitcher, but in Nick Pollock's mind, he was number 20, which I get there should be some regression, but come on. You want 19 pitchers more than you want Dylan Cease next year? I'm not buying it.
So you specified that this had to be on Nick's list?
Yes, which I will never do again. I am not going to
Because where'd he finish on the player rater? Yeah.
On the player rater, he was 6, and I said it in my recap.
That's right.
Yeah. On Razzball's player rater, that was what I used for hitters, for pitchers. I use Nick's rank, which I won't use. I'll use a value calculator next year. So even if I did, I would have given, I wanted to give myself credit for that. And in spirit, this bold prediction is right. Like, if you've read this article and we're like, all right, I'll bump up Dylan Cease around in my drafts, like that served its purpose. Like, they got back to bold predictions and like the purpose of it. Like, it's a way of saying, okay, here's a guy that I'm, higher or lower than the market and willing to bump up a round or two because I think this is their top outcome. Cease reached his top outcome. He just, has a slightly elevated walk rate. Like, sure, there'll be some regressions, but I'm willing to go have a battle with Nick on Cease that he'll finish above the 20th rank starting pitcher next year.
Well, hey, I kind of fought the battle for you, Steve, because I had to defend my third round pick of Cease at
there you go.
SP Love number it. 10.
I cannot wait to hear that. And cannot wait to
yeah,
hear that.
I was, I was giving it a full go. He brought up some good points.
So what was your, not to spoil the podcast, but what was your pushback, I guess, against, the obvious concern that there is an elevated walk rate, the home run rate was suppressed, it was a high left on base rate.
Yep.
What was your cliff note version without spoiling the episode so people actually go tune into that.
For sure. I mean, you know, part of the discussion is that, you know, to think that a 26-year-old can't improve a 10% walk rate as he's still basically like developing as a pitcher. To me, the argument for both him and Strider was the idea is trying to grab pitchers who appear to be on the ascent and they're still figuring out their pitch mix. And I think the fact that his slider is so nasty and the, I mean, we're laughing about the minus 36 run value, complete joke. But even over the past 2 years, I think there's a floor that's being ignored with Cease a little bit because over his last 350 innings, he has a 30% strikeout rate. So that is not something, especially as his volume has worked up to where now I think 180 is the expectation. That's not a bad floor, even if you slap like a 3.8 ERA with it. But if he improves the 10% walk rate, because Nick put on his list rankings, who's the last pitcher to flirt with a 2 ERA with a 10% walk rate, I'll wait type of a thing. And Corbin Burnes did that. He had a different path to getting there, but another one that was kind of similar that we talked about was Robbie Ray, who just improved, even at his old age, the control issues. So it's part of that. And I think the other part is just that the fastball and curve have underperformed so much up to this point to where, you know, it's he has a lot of velo.
If there's any bit of improvement in those two pitches, like he can get better, which is scary.
That's exactly right. Think about what
McClanahan did, a guy that we'll talk about in a little bit. Like he came out and like, you know, we were in love with the slider and then his fastball was better, his curveball was better, his changeup was better. So much so that his slider became the fourth pitch. Like imagine if there's just a 40% gain of that. You know, those things sort of happen, right? And Cease has the stuff that if there's something like that, that that happens to even just one of those pitches, like there could be even more of an upside, right? Because, yeah, you're right. He did this with a 10% walk rate.
Yeah, and I think the fact that, you know, I think wins is also a potential growth area just because La Russa and the White Sox were such a dumpster fire. But anyway, I mean, I totally get your point. And it is pricey for Cease. And yes, if it goes wrong, it could slide a lot further than like a Brandon Woodruff and so on and so forth. But all that said, you can tune in for the full debate. But yeah, I think you basically crushed that bold prediction. Just by the letter of the law, did not count officially as a hit. I got crushed on my next bold prediction, Steve, and it was probably the one I was most fired up about. I just got to keep talking about Yasmani Grandal, I guess, till the end of time. He's like penance for all the haterade I had with Eugenio Suarez. But Yasmani Grandal, I was really excited at the end of 21 with the surge he was on with an 1154 OPS in his last 100 at bats or so with a little swing change in the minors. However, he was kind of the poster boy for one of them for the dumpster fire with the White Sox. My bold prediction was that Grandal would finish the number one catcher and bat 265. He batted 202 and he finished the 63rd catcher. So both Joey Votto and Grandal, 63rd at the position, which is how I was doing my bold predictions. It all went wrong, you know, uncharacteristic. And part of it was, you know, there was some bad luck mixed in there, but he was off. He said it was the knee that was bothering him, which was his final IL stint. You know, it'll be interesting this year from the total bargain bin of catcher if you miss out on kind of the top 10 or so. I don't think it's a terrible idea to see if Grandal can get back to being like a 240, 25 homer guy. But yeah, it was a huge miss and I still don't hate the process. You know, even rereading it, I was trying to convince myself over again, but yeah, it went way south and did not look good in the process. So big miss on Grandal for my second one.
He slugged 269. That was close to the 265 batting average call.
Twist a knife, man.
I'm sorry. That was a low blow.
Yeah, no, I deserve it, man. Keep them coming.
No. Not at all. Not at all. Happens to the best of us. But I think you make a good point. Like, it's very similar to Votto, right? Like, as long as you're kind of comfortable, you might be, as my buddy Rich in our home league says, you might have to jump back on the catcher carousel. You know, the place that you go if you don't have a top catcher and just add one each week and try and ride it out. So you may be on that quickly, but it's worth a shot. As like, if you do the punt catcher category in like a one catcher league, like, it's worth saying, hey, maybe Grandal will be a lot better than he was last year because he's capable of doing it. We saw it just a year ago. So
thanks for the consolation there, Steve.
Yeah.
Let's keep it moving right along to your number third. And finally, we have a hit here. So there we take go. The lap.
There we go. Yep. Yep. A guy that was pretty divisive too. I know a lot of Met fans, friends that were pretty much out on Lindor and Francisco Lindor. That is, my bold prediction was that he would be a top three shortstop. He finished third on the Razzball Player Raider, behind Trey Turner. And quick trivia, do you have a guess of who was second in front of Lindor?
Well, it probably was not. Was it Bo Bichette with all the counting stats?
Nope, I believe Bo was four.
Who else would be short? I'm blanking right now.
Somewhat of a surprising name in the same division as Lindor.
Bobby Witt?
Same division, NL East.
Oh, gosh, I'm still in Cleveland, aren't I?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, Dansby.
Yep. Dansby Swanson was the number two shortstop, which is pretty crazy. But, yeah, like, a lot of people, you know, thought that LOL Mets, it would be a waste of a year, but, you know, Lindor quietly had the second highest WRC plus of his career. He had a 132 in 2018, and his WRC plus this year was 127. Yes, well, obviously a lot of that has to do with how suppressed offense was, but hey, he was still 27% better than league average at shortstop with the bat, and had great counting stats, 26 homers, 16 steals, hit 270, so it was like a five-category fantasy contributor, like essentially kind of what peak Lindor was, just adjusted for the run environment. So, yeah, I mean, the warning signs were there last year. There was the fact that he was far too passive, which, you know, probably was having to do with pressing for that huge extension that he got, the $30 million a year extension, trying to justify that, the pressure of coming to New York and the Mets being so bad in 2021. Despite that, he still had a 2010 season. Obviously it wasn't what you hoped for fantasy wise or what the Mets were doing. So it's nice to see that Lindor is back to being that top fantasy asset, of a shortstop. And, you know, I think we might not see like the 38-25 seasons again, unless like the ball rapidly changes. But, you know, I could expect like going forward, like 25-15 with like a decent average and great counting stats, right? Like, you can sort of project that through his early 30s as he's entering his age 29 season here, which is kind of what the Mets hope for when they signed him that contract. And I think that's what Lindor is at this point, and that's really, really good.
Yeah, and he's kind of an interesting one because, you know, his player page doesn't light up red, and that's been the case. And I remember, you know, to coattail your victory lap here, I was fighting an uphill battle on the PitchCon with Scott White because I said Lindor was one that I was thinking would have a bounce back, and he was like going the complete opposite direction. Like, people were out on Lindor.
He was divisive. He was very divisive, yeah.
And I remember some of those arguments were like, what's going to improve? Like, he's not a 30 homer guy. It looks like he's every bit of like a, you know, standard 255 average guy because he was coming off the 230 season. But I think this is what it should look like with Lindor, with like spread out contribution across the board and really good counting stats with the Mets. So yeah, I like it. I wonder if he's going to because of the fact that he's not like a barrel king or anything like mm-hmm. that. Like he went at the first pick of the third round in our mock draft. So that's what, pick 25? I would mm-hmm. say by the time we're in prime draft season, that's going to go the other way, where I think he'll be somewhere in like the mid-30s.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And obviously we love Savant, we love StatCast, but like when a guy like Lindor that isn't like the StatCast darling has an off year, I think we may go too far the other way.
Yep.
Where the same sort of thing, like, you know, a guy like Tyler O'Neill that absolutely mashes the ball, has a season where everything breaks right, like we might go too far the other way. Those are two opposite end of the spectrum type of players. Yep. And when a guy that doesn't have like a bright red StatCast page, it's like, oh, well, you know, everything we knew about him was true. Like he was obviously not as good as we thought. And, you know, it isn't this amazing fantasy player. We might jump to that conclusion a little bit too quickly. I think that's what we did with Lindor there. And, you know, if you grabbed him late, you got a lot of value. I think he was probably going like a shortstop 10 last year, 10 to 12, something like that. So I doubt there'll be that sort of value this year on him, but he had a great year.
For sure, and it's a great bold prediction there. If people backed that, they were reaping the benefits. But on to my third miss here, which was Jorge Soler. And this one was a little unfortunate with injury, but the prediction was that he would finish a top 50 overall player and a top 15 outfielder. Nowhere close. He only played 72 games, had some rough injuries with a pelvis thing and then lower back spasms that pretty much knocked him out the rest of the season. He did have 13 homers in 72 games, but the strikeout rate was way up. So part of the reason for the bold prediction was that his K rate was down to 18% when he joined the Braves, and his slug, all his homers were through the roof. World Series MVP, I think, is quickly forgotten about. And the thought was at the discount, he could kind of put it all together. Then he signed with the Marlins, which wasn't great. He batted .207, which wasn't great. This seems like waiver wire fodder probably, mm-hmm. Steve, but maybe, you know, potential streamer if you need some power, or in super deep leagues, depending on if he comes back healthy and hitting homers and stuff. I still like some of the, you know, again, going back to the StatCast numbers, I like some of those, but I think this was just a shot at the top outcome, and between injuries and the plate discipline just did not work out.
Yeah. Not to like critique or like get too like in depth here, but I think, and as we go on, like I think a lot of your other picks will look a lot better, but I think maybe an issue here sort of with the process, if you don't mind me chiming in on that, but I think maybe at least these first three were too backward looking and focusing on like the smaller sample of a second half sort of run.
Definitely Grandal and Soler.
Yeah. Whereas like better predictions are taking some larger, longer narrative and applying it to a more forward thinking, okay, this guy should bounce back or this guy should break out sort of process, right? Like I think that's, well, not that, you know, you want these to all be right, because then they, like we said, this wouldn't be the process, but I think that might be the way to sort of
but yeah,
find a sweet spot and at least identify players that, you know, we could fade or be more correct about, at least in the direction, right?
Yeah, maybe just the some smaller or more, I guess, targeted metrics, but not just from like August on or something like that.
Or even results based, right? Like, you know, if there's, I forget who it was, but it's a philosophy I try to apply to, I think maybe it was like Paul Sporer back on a podcast and Sleeper in the Bus. Like, there needs to be a reason that you identify why these things sort of happen. Like, right? Like, you know, Rafael Devers, to take for example from this year, like he had that hamstring injury, he had a back injury, And as soon as he came back from that hamstring injury, he was just not the same player. Like, you could, like, there's a narrative to apply to say, okay, this is why this player disappointed or overachieved. And if you can identify that, I think that it's a way to sort of at least have a good process to picking things. Not that those things weren't a good process, but just something, a takeaway. You know, for my picks that were wrong too, we'll get to one in two here that I kind of did the same thing.
For sure, yeah. And I think, you know, there's some narrative, there's some underlyings that looked good, but I think it's totally fair to say, like, both of those were, and a couple other ones I have on this list, are completely hitched to splits and kind of a recency bias.
Yeah, like a recency bias. Yep. Yeah, it's tough to make predictions off of recency bias or splits. That's
for sure.
Definitely a lesson learned.
Okay, well, let's go to your fourth one, Steve, on the pitchers here.
Yep, a little regional prediction here. I had that Shane McClanahan would be the best pitcher in the AL East, and Trevor Rogers would be the best pitcher in the NL East. So if I wanted to bend the rules, I could have given myself sort of half credit there.
Point
five. I think Gerrit Cole finished ahead of McClanahan on, obviously, Knicks rankings and the Razzball player rater. McClanahan was hurt and sort of faded a bit after the All-Star break. But, hey, process-wise, I'm proud that I had McClanahan as an up arrow in my prediction. Trevor Rogers, though, on the other hand, was the exact opposite. Just everything that could go wrong did go wrong for him. There's, you know, back injuries all year. Like, he finally looked good, said he felt good after a few rehab outings, and then was eventually shut down at the end of the year with a lat injury that he said was unrelated to back, which is good news considering, you know, it wasn't something that recurred that helped derail his season or the first few months of his season. So kind of the opposite. It's kind of fitting, right? Like, these are two pitchers that I love. Like, I could have taken one here and the other in another draft, and that's sort of the downside of my fade pitching and identify these upside plays, right? Like, it's kind of just a coin flip, right? If I would have taken McClanahan or Rogers, although to be fair, I did like McClanahan more than Rogers and had more shares. So it just speaks to the difficulty, kind of like what Little Piranha was saying. Like, is that good process if you had McClanahan and Rogers in the same bucket? I don't know, because it depends if you got lucky or not with McClanahan, but
I think, I think you would take that, though. I mean, they're both in the ballpark of pick 100 range, give or take. And McClanahan certainly came out as, I mean, even on the player radar, he was 11th, all things considered. There was only one AL East pitcher above him. It was not Gerrit Cole.
It was
Alek Manoah.
Manoah, there you go. Yeah.
But I think if you, you know, with the way pitchers kind of ebb and flow, if you're getting like a top five guy at pick 100, yeah, this was a great prediction as well. It was just Rogers had a slew of issues that mm-hmm. have yet to be corrected. So I think it's a good one.
I still have hope for Rogers. What about you?
He's one I want to look into more, because talk about being burned. I mean, you and I were both kind of waiting on him for, you know, the first 2 months of the season, and I was watching a couple of starts.
Yeah, right. Very. He closely. Was probably on every bounce back episode for us.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And
it was to a point where, like, you know, he was on the wire, and it felt weird to see him out there. So I was, you know, at my in-laws watching Trevor Rogers go through five innings, and I was like, it looks good, and then it would all go wrong, and you know, it was just like, it was a struggle. So he's one that I definitely want, because there will be value there if you believe in him. So he's going to be well worth a deep dive. But yeah, that's a good one for sure. I'm sticking with pitchers on mine. This was maybe kind of a spiritual W, but it goes back to that Little Piranha question of, you know, process, because Blake Snell was the prediction as a top 10 SP, which on the surface was simply not true. He was the 49th overall pitcher, so not even close to the top 10. But part of that was an injury in the first half. The other part was he really struggled in the first half. He did not let go of that changeup, which is what I was excited about at the end of 21, again, looking at that second half results. But Blake Snell is throwing us right back in that conundrum because he was the number two pitcher overall in the second half with 105 strikeouts over 78 innings, a 2.19 ERA, and a 1.03 whip. So because I'm desperate for any sort of win, that's my spiritual win, that at least Snell was well above a top 10 pitcher in the second half, but still overall a major headache. My brother drafted him, and he was, you know, pointing in my face after the draft about my bold prediction, and he was like, yeah, thanks for the pick. And then he was mad at me the rest of the, you know, spring months because Snell was a bum. But then he really turned it on, and yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see. I mean, out of the gate, I saw he has a pretty crazy min pick max pick range, and I think it's going to stay that way, where he's probably going to be anywhere from 65 to 145 overall in drafts. And yeah, it should be interesting, but I think I'm ready to get hurt again with Snell. It just looks so good when he is good. And at some point you're like begging for conventional wisdom that he just sticks to what he knows works. But anyway, that's Snell, and it was, again, a miss, but it was at least closer than my first three.
Yeah, the min pick is going to be like the guys who traded for him or added him off the wire in the second half or held on to him. Right. The max pick is going to be the guys that, you know, had to deal with him through April, May, and June when he was bad Blake Snell. But, you know, it kind of sums him up. Like, he's like a Jekyll and Hyde player, right? Like, sometimes he looks like a Cy Young and won a Cy Young, and literally in the second half he was, you know, those were Cy Young type numbers. In the first half, you really couldn't even really roster him. So I think overall it'll probably be somewhere in between those two, and like a good strikeout rate with a mid threes ERA. Hopefully it's a little bit more balanced production. I think that'll be better for everybody else's sake, though.
Yep. Totally fair. Well, let's keep moving. And Steve, let's get to your fifth, back to the hitter side here.
Yeah, this was not a good one, one that I'm not proud of. This one's tough to read. Brendan Rodgers and Ryan McMahon out-earned Nolan Arenado and Trevor Story. You know, Story even kind of opened the gate for me with how bad and down a year that he had, just with everything that went on. Injury, hit by pitch, you know, I think he was sick at one point too for a while. You know, everything that could go wrong did go wrong for Story. I think he may be my Lindor version of a bounce back, though, next year with all the things that went wrong for him. So getting into the sneak peek territory, I guess, there. But Brendan Rodgers and Ryan McMahon did nothing to you know, even make this pick sort of interesting. And on top of that, Nolan Arenado was an MVP finalist. So there we go with me fading a guy that burned me the year before by, you know, I was all in on Arenado in 2021. He was pretty much meh. And then now this is the year to have him. So just, you know, a total miss kind of all around there by me.
Yeah, it was weird. I liked Rodgers too, so I'm not going to hide from this. I was kind of a fade on Story, but Rodgers, you know, some of the underlying stuff looked okay, and he had a really good 21, but he just didn't get that full season Coors bounce that you were hoping for. I mean, the 266 average is fine, but just 13 homers in 137 games compared to 15 the year before in 35 less games. So, yeah he just couldn't get the power.
If you look at his splits on the road, it is like, you know, he was pretty good at home and usable fantasy-wise, but on the road he was just, you know, it was like one of the most pronounced Coors splits that I have ever seen.
Yeah, Crone had a brutal one as well, so that's something to think about for the Coors guys.
Yeah, he had, as I'm scrolling here, he had a 117 WRC plus at home, a 65 WRC plus on the road. So just not good. At home, he was 317, 377, 498. On the road, he was 218, 271, 317. So that was good for an 875 OPS at home, 558 on the road. So not great.
Yep.
I wonder if you know what's sort of preventing that breakout is the constant having to adjust to home and on the road and the altitude and cores. Like, you know, the metrics are there that's why we liked Rodgers as sort of a breakout pick. Like, you could see some growth in the barrel rate and the max EV is there, and you know, that's improving, the hard hit rate's improving, but it's just hard for him to sort of put it all together, right? Like, a strikeout rate under 20%, like, all the signs are there. It's just, it's hard to develop in Colorado.
Yep. So that's Brendan Rodgers, and, you know, nothing of note for Ryan McMahon either. So
yeah, just a meh season.
Yeah. Meh season. So my fifth, and this one, you know, is another one that was kind of hampered by injury a little bit, but Giancarlo Stanton will finish a top 10 hitter, getting real bold there, with a 150.50 WRC plus. He had a 115 WRC plus and finished 174 overall as a hitter, but that was only with 110 games. He did have 31 homers, dealt with more injuries with the calf strain and Achilles issue, but he just hit 211. And the strikeout rate climbed up, which is not what we were looking for. It was back up to 30%, second highest of his career. Is worth noting that Stanton had a 227 BABIP, and with how hard he hits the ball, his career BABIP is 314. So I think this could present a value opportunity, but it comes with kind of the Stanton headaches. Definitely a miss here, but didn't hate the process looking back at it. Overall, just a lot of things went wrong, from injury to plain luck to a little bit of plate discipline issues. But, you know, Stanton was not the story for the Yankees this year, clearly, and that was what the bold prediction was.
Yeah, he's getting to an age where, right, it's going to be harder to see an improved strikeout rate year over year, right? I think you kind of project that to slowly get worse, and you know, even more so than the typical Stanton injuries that we deal with. That's kind of what would concern me the most. Similar to Buxton, not the exact same story, but similar sort of profile and issues. Like,
yeah, Mount Rushmore probably of hitter
injury
think,
risks. Yeah, exactly, and I think maybe you know, the upside is more like a 2021 season, which was good. You know, that was 140 games, 35 home runs, and an 870 OPS. You know, maybe that's now the ceiling.
Yep. So Stanton had plenty of time to analyze him in the offseason. We are going to get to the second half of these and speed up the pace, but first we're going to take a quick ad break, and we'll be right back. All right, so Steve, we got to ramp it up here, but let's go into hyperdrive mode. Start us off with your 6-1, which I would say is closer than the previous one, but not a full hit for you.
Close, but no cigar. This pick was that Andrew Vaughn finishes the most valuable White Sox hitter, and a lot of guys did have some down years. You know, Eli Robert was a disappointment. Eloy Jimenez was hurt. Jose Abreu basically didn't hit for power. So the door was open for Andrew Vaughn to finish as the most valuable White Sox hitter. But it's kind of, you know, it wasn't a horrible season. Like, he was still pretty good, a 750 OPS. But, you know, just 17 home runs. The counting stats were good, not great. 60 runs, 76 RBIs in 134 games. He took a step, but not just the massive step that you wanted to see for this bold prediction to come true. I'm hoping that the White Sox give him like the chance to just be the first baseman, let Jose Abreu go. He won't have to play outfield anymore, a place that they kind of shoved him in there. But the barrel rate was not as good as what it was in 2021. In 2021 is 11%. This year it was 8%. Maybe we got a little bit too excited about Vaughn. He might be more of an average and a 25 homer ceiling than like the 35 homer ceiling that I envisioned at first. But here's another fun one. He finished behind Jose Abreu in the player rater for White Sox hitters, and believe it or not, Elvis Andrews was the other White Sox hitter.
I was cracking up in your article. It's checks crazy. Notes. It's crazy. Elvis yeah. Andrews. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I think Vaughn, there's some sneaky value here. And with La Russa out, I think Vaughn is going to get an opportunity to catch a little bit more rhythm. He did play 134 games, but I think when it was, again, so stop-start and all of the drama going on in Chicago, I think better days are ahead for Vaughn, who's just 24 still, so I like it. My next one, we don't need to spend a ton of time on, thankfully, which was Connor Joe will hit 30 home runs and double his projections. He did not. He had 7 home runs in 111 games after the previous year where he had 8 homers in 63 games. He had been hitting the ball a lot harder with some power in AAA. Thought maybe Coors would give him a little bump there, but the hard hit rate plummeted from 39% down to 26%, which is massive. Again, you know, I think a lot of people were excited about Connor Joe last season. This was a, you know, like the player, let's see how bold we can go. And yeah, it was just another miss here for Joe. But
first few weeks of the season, this prediction was looking really good. Joe got off to a scorching hot start. I think he had like 3 or 4 home runs for the first 2 weeks, but
yeah, hitting for average. Well
on your pace. Yeah, he was looking good. But lesson learned, don't pick Rockies in your bold prediction.
Yes, that says it well. So let's get to a better one, Steve.
Yeah, I had to throw my boy Steven Kwan here. I hyped him up all last offseason. Predicted that he finished as a top 30 outfielder on the Razzball player rater. He finished as the 19th best outfielder. That was despite, you know, hitting for less power than I thought. It was just 6 home runs, but he made up for it in the steals department. He had 19. That really came along in the second half. He really started running. I think he got caught stealing like 2 or 3 times in April and didn't run for a while. And then, you know, really started to figure something out. But obviously it was the hit tool that carried him. He had .298, got on base at a .373 clip, slugged .400. You know, if he does have, you know, maybe not the 200-194 ISOs he had in AA and AAA in 2021, that got me a little bit more excited. But, you know, if that's more like around 150, you know, there's even some more room for upside here if he can get to like double-digit home runs with that plate discipline. He struck out less than he walked. He walked 9.7% of the time, struck out just 9.4% of the time. So
yep.
Kwan was pretty awesome last year.
Yeah, and I think a big offseason narrative we're going to hear from everyone, if you guys are just tuning in, is that the bigger bases on the paths should help the guys who are kind of in that middle range of stolen base speed or production. And Kwan would fit into that category for me, to where maybe he gets a bump and the ultra green light, he gets up in the mid-20s, upper 20s would be great. But yeah, it'd be great to see the power develop. So love Kwan, love the pick. And that was kind of your poster boy all offseason. So great call there. In the interest of not burying the lead of the only one that I got right, I'm actually going to shuffle the deck here and go.
There we go.
The single victory that I actually had.
You deserve it. Yeah.
That a healthy Gerrit Cole will finish outside the top 10 starting pitchers. There was some process here that kind of mapped out, because I know it was a weird pitcher year, and a lot of this was other pitchers being fantastic and just the offensive environment. But I didn't love how his home run per nine had gone up quite a bit since Spingate. His fastball spin rate was down since the whole banned substance. And his fastball spin rate is still kind of down compared to where it used to be, around 2600, 2550. It's been at 2400 since all of that happened. And Cole gets barreled up quite a bit. And that was the crux of this prediction, is that in the article, it was a 3.52 ERA projection, and in real life, he had a 3.50 ERA, wow. So pretty close. Still plenty of Ks, which was to be expected. But yeah, he finished outside the top 10 starting pitcher. I think it was 14 overall. So a bunch of names ahead of him, but obviously a wacky year. Just feels good to get one in the win column so I can at least say 10% of the bold predictions were right for me, Steve.
Oh, yeah, you passed the test. That's exactly what we go for, and you got it. Great process there. I think it was a great call. And kind of, you know, why, you know, you don't have to tell me to fade early, you know, the aces of the aces, or, you know, or pitchers in the first round. So I was with you lockstep there.
Yeah, I think his floor is what's keeping him as SP1 overall, because you're
that's
just...
That's his floor, because that's his floor, right? That's how good he is, that this SP14 and a really good one at that, you know, still in a 15-team league, still the best pitcher on one of your teams, right? That's what makes Cole so good, and that's the argument against everything I say there.
For
totally
sure.
Fair and understand it.
Yep, Tony Gonsolin is not going to beat
exactly
Garrett Cole next season. Yes. So that's kind of the crux. So, all right, Steve, on to a pitcher for you and Cole's teammate at the start of the year.
Yeah, Jordan Montgomery. I made the prediction that he would be the highest ranked Yankees starting pitcher. That was not the case. There were several others, including Cole, that finished ahead of him. Kind of could, you know, argue that, you know, the arrow was right on this one. I think. He had a really good year, and especially when he went over to the Cardinals in the Harrison Bader trade, they allowed him to use his four-seam fastball more, which, you know, unlocked some strikeouts. I know he faded a bit towards the end with the Cardinals, and I think did he? You would know this better than me. Did he not make the postseason rotation, or they weren't going to use him? I know they didn't have many postseason games, but. He sort of faded enough that it was a question mark if he even would get a start in the postseason. But that being said, it seems like the Cardinals may have unlocked a little bit of a strikeout upside that I was hoping for that would come through. It didn't this year, despite him being pretty good. But there still may be some strikeout there because potential there because the swing and miss or then whiffs numbers indicate that there would be, especially on the changeup. And now if this fastball could become more of a put-away pitch, like he actually said, I believe he said it on a podcast with CC Sabathia when he got traded, that, you know, it allowed him to establish the fastball as more of a swing-and-miss pitch where he never was able to get comfortable with it with the Yankees because they just wanted to throw that two-seamer and he never got comfortable with the four-seam. So, well, think he had a better year than a lot of people were expecting, and I still may be in on him next year as well with the Cardinals.
Yeah, he had a bad stretch at the end of the season and threw some relief in the short postseason for the Cards. But yeah, that was in a longer series might have gotten stretched out. But yeah, I think I'll be interested in Montgomery. I mean,
much better place to pitch, right?
Yeah, much better place, and he doesn't get the division because of the new schedules, is a little unfortunate with like the Pirates and, you know, the Reds and all that. But still, I think we still like the fact that he gets more whiffs than translates to the Ks because that seems like an easy path to unlock some more fantasy value. So like that one a lot. On to my next one, which was again closer. That I categorized this with the Blake Snell one, which was that Hunter Renfroe would be a top 50 overall player in 5x5. He was not. He was not even close. He was 120th amongst hitters. to immediately throw cold water on that, but just 125 games played. He had a hamstring strain, which limited kind of the overall volume. And I think he was on the path that I was aiming for because he hit 255 and had 29 homers in that 125. So if he would have been able to, you know, go 150, maybe that's 36 homers, a little bit of wish casting. The Brewers offense wasn't great, so the counting stats weren't as good as I would have liked. But one thing that is worth noting for fantasy purposes next year is he did hold on to some of those plate discipline gains. Just a 23% strikeout rate. And when you pair that with true 30 homer pop, I think that's a pretty good combination for a guy who should be hitting in the heart of the order. You just got to hope that it kind of is less of the three-run games for the Brewers. So I think Renfro was an all right one for process and results. His back of the card looks okay, but yeah,
this just missed because of volume, right? Like, you know, had he been healthy, he definitely would have come close.
He would have flirted, you know, with
35, yeah. 40 homers. Add in the counting stats for runs and RBIs that would have came along, he would have been a lot closer. So
for yeah, sure,
I think this was a good call.
Not the worst one. So
nope.
Back to you, Steve, on last couple ones.
So this call was a little bit specific, but it was that Trey Turner would have the best fantasy season per the Razzball Player Rater since Charlie Blackmon in 2017. I think Blackmon had like $49 worth of value. And the logic there was, you know, Turner has the power, speed, average floor to do everything there. And what is funny is that someone actually did have a better fantasy season than Charlie Blackmon. It just was not Trey Turner. It was Aaron Judge. Had I predicted that, that would have been a lot bolder. I would have looked a lot smarter. Aaron Judge, I think, had $68 worth of value, which, you know, I look back, I think the Razzball Player Rating goes back to 2016 or 2017, and Blackmon was the highest at that 49. And, like, you know, there's a lot of seasons, 48, 47. Judge was just so good that he blew by that by like $20. Absolutely insane what Judge did. Turner wasn't bad himself. I think he was third on the player rater with like $40 worth of value. So didn't pass Blackmon in 2017, but still had a pretty good year, but not quite enough to be that best fantasy season in the last half a decade, like my prediction said.
Yeah. I think it was worth the shot again, looking at the, 90th percentile outcome or something. But, Judge, not a bad season.
No.
All right. I'm pairing my last two, Steve, because I don't want to talk about either one of them. Aaron Civale leads the AL Central in wins, and Jack Flaherty finishes as a top five starting pitcher overall. Flaherty was injured most of the season and came nowhere close. So that was kind of a bit of a wash, because that came out after, of course, the bold prediction. And then Civale, now his teammate had the most wins in the AL Central, but it was not Civale. It was actually Cal Quantrill.
Wow.
So that is a little bit of a surprise.
I would have guessed Bieber or McKenzie before that, yeah.
And that's what was part of the process for the Guardians, is they do like to let their pitchers go. And I forget what I cited with Civale, but it was something like the amount of games he threw seven innings or more.
Mm-hmm.
But Civale had, you know, for one, it's a reach anyway, but he only had 97 innings, had three different injuries, so a miss there. But yeah, that's just the spirit of bold predictions. When you get this deep into it, you're kind of looking at things that are different than just
strikeout rate, you're like the personification of the gif or the meme of the Always Sunny gif with all the, you know, the cork board and all the arrows pointing, trying to figure out when you're writing your seventh bold prediction and you're deep into Savant, Statcast, and Fangraphs and Pitcherless player pages. You look like that, and you get there. But I will say, Civale did have some nice starts towards the end of the year. The curveball looked really good, kind of like that 2019, 2020 Civale that was pretty good. So there were some encouraging things there. It was obviously a lot of injuries. I think he had some sort of weird hand injury, right? He got hit by a comebacker, I think, if that's correct.
That sounds familiar.
Flaherty, though, I don't know. I had him in a lot of places last year, even as when his stock fell. He said he was right, and then came back from that rehab where, you know, they eventually said that he came back too early, and then, you know, there was some flashes, I think, at the very, very end that were encouraging, but it's going to be hard for me to jump back in as someone who's liked Flaherty a lot throughout his whole career. I guess I'll need to see a fully healthy spring training for him before I buy into anything.
Yeah, that's it's a good one to watch in spring training, and I believe this will be the contract year.
Yeah.
For Flaherty, so he has some incentive there. But yeah, I think with Cardinal Nation growing a little sour on Flaherty, I mean, just he had an attitude about people asking him about the injury, and then to do that and come out and throw 36 innings, like, I know you don't have much control over health, but don't shame reporters for asking you about it if you're actually injured.
Yeah, if you're actually, it's a valid question if that's the case. Yeah,
yeah. But round us out, Steve, with your final one here.
Yeah, you gave this one a little inside baseball here. There's highlights like our ones that are right are like a bright green, and then depending on if there was some value, there's like a medium green highlight and then a really light green highlight from the ones that you have to squint to see if they're right. This one has like a medium green highlight. That's Robbie Ray finishes outside the top 75 starting pitchers. He obviously wasn't that bad, but, he did not repeat the Cy Young year. There was some regression overall. There was some times where it looked pretty bad for Ray, but despite him going to a much better pitcher's park in Seattle, the home run rate and the walk rate did creep back up, and that sort of led to an in between outcome from his disaster years like what happened in 2020 and his Cy Young year in 2021. So I do like Ray. I think that this is kind of who the pitcher he is. It's just everything broke right for him in 2021 that there had to be some sort of regression. Not enough for this bold prediction to come true, but got the arrow trending right on this one, which is kind of all you can ask for when you're trying to go this bold.
Yeah, and not that it was some genius call on our part, but I remember as we were assessing Ray, we were very much in this realm of like, I think he's probably high threes. He's going to get you the strikeouts and volume and all that stuff, but high threes, ERA, and, a decent whip. And that's exactly what he did. Now, I was listening to Schwebze and Nick on Schwebze's pitcherless mock recap, and they were talking about Robbie Ray. And they talked about this line of a 3.71 ERA, 189 innings, 212 strikeouts, and a 119 whip. And Nick kind of said, this is Dylan Cease, which is why you can wait on Dylan Cease. So I think this is, to me, the floor for Cease, just to come full circle.
Agreed.
On that.
That's
discussion.
Yes.
And I think that 212 strikeouts over 189 innings seems low. So I think the ratios is kind of the floor. But I think, again, there's so much that can happen that's, much, much better than this. But anyway, just we were talking about him earlier, so I think it's full circle there that this kind of what Ray just did is kind of what Cease's floor is. And the difference in our mock draft was Cease went at the end of the third round, and then Ray did go at the start of the ninth round. So
I get the logic, but the people that are out on Cease are gonna have Ray. But I'd still take Cease over him. I guess it is debatable if it's worth
that
sixth
cost.
Round
yeah.
of value, but Cease is a younger pitcher. I think may have some more room to develop, like
unlock
you said
it.
Earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Steve, we've made it through this, and I'd be remiss not to say, and I should have said it from the jump, but we had stakes from my bold prediction article, and I wrote, as Steve Gisuelli is reading this, I am listing the betting terms that whoever gets more of these right gets a pitcherless merch item. So as long as you're not finding like a pitcherless branded suit jacket or something, why don't you do some shopping? Pick
nice.
Something
out. I forgot about that.
Oh yeah, you got a little PL merch, maybe. Yeah. And yeah, I think we already got your address because of the daughter quilt. So we'll get it sent over there. You just let me know what you want, and we got to keep the stakes the same for this year, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That is we'll definitely do it again. This was a lot of fun. I don't. Did we do an article? Did we do an episode on this when we wrote them?
We did chalkboard and bold predictions. We were at the hour 20 mark, and we were like, "Do we want to talk about any bold predictions?"
Yeah. It's a long off season. I'm sure we'll get to it. I know I wrote mine like super early, like in January last year. So it's hard to believe that's only like 2 months away. But we'll get there. I'm excited for. Start to look forward now that we put a bow on all of our official predictions, which is nice.
All right, Steve, how about we do just to wrap up the show, one player that you know you're going to be doing a bold prediction on next year, and then I'll do one as well.
Yeah, I hinted at one with Story. That one I'm not as passionate about, but a guy that I think I'm going to be all over and maybe, you know, this year's McClanahan for me. Maybe I'll do him as best pitcher in like the NL Central or something like that. But that's Nick Lodolo. I think that this guy is going to explode onto the scene more so than he even did last year. It looks like eerily similar to what Cease did last year. You know, 103 innings, close to a 30, or what McClanahan and sort of Cease did in 2021. But 103 innings, close to a 30% strikeout rate. Walk rate's under 9 at just 8.8%. You know, has all the stuff from the left side, like, you know, amazing swinging strike rates all through the minors. A good one this year to back it up. Had some struggles and is like an elevated surface ERA at 3.66. So, like, it, you know, might get the first glance sort of pass over by just looking at the numbers. But I think Lodolo has the makings of the next fantasy ace. So too early bold predictions. Nick Lodolo is a fantasy ace in 2023.
Very nice. Yeah, I love it. And I love that you didn't go, not to steal the thunder, because you got the Pollock pod to talk about him. But
oh, yeah.
I feel like Christian Javier is going to be the Buxton version this offseason where, gosh, I hope the helium doesn't get too much for official drafts, but I was wondering if you're going to go Javier till you said NL Central. I'll stay in the NL Central for mine, Steve, and it's a homer pick, and it's another name that should be popular this offseason. It is Lars Nootbaar.
Oh.
And I'm excited to dive into the plate discipline and all good things about Lars Nootbaar. I don't actually have the bold prediction itself. I got to give myself.
Yeah, it's
all right.
It's a rough draft. It's a rough draft. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
fine. But yeah, Nootbaar, and I've got a handful of other names that I thought we could share. But hey, that's our teaser for the bold prediction articles, and maybe a show when we get to early 2023. So that pretty much rounds us out. Long show, but good recap. Steve, it's great talking through these. Great catching up in general. And yeah, a couple weeks we'll be back on, but I'm excited to tune into the Pollock pods as they come out.
We'll have those come out so you can catch us on another podcast, which is nice. I think we had a lot of guests last offseason. I think maybe we could try and do that again. I have nothing official lined up right now, so can't tease anything or anything like that. But, you know, it's a good time. People aren't as busy and you can jump on. Which is always fun to do. So looking forward to that and starting to get into it, man. I'm getting the itch to start to preview and prep for 2023. But before we know it, it'll be drafts. So cannot wait.
Absolutely. Yeah, snow on the ground. It's like, get us out of this desperation with some fantasy baseball talk. So thank you guys for listening, and we'll be back in a couple weeks. This was Wins Above Fantasy, episode 79. On behalf of Steve Gisuelli, I'm Van Burnett. Thank you guys for tuning in. Please go out, give us a rating, review on Apple, Spotify, wherever you guys get the podcast. And feel free to email us, winsabovefantasy@gmail.com, with any show topics in the offseason. But that's all we got. It's been great talking baseball with you, and we will talk to you guys in a couple weeks.
Thanks, guys. Later.